A quick note, if you're listening to The Gist on Overcast right now, we would appreciate it if you would follow the show, star the episodes you really like, and share them with a friend. It's easy to do. It helps us keep the show growing and evolving. Although they say the Irish elk evolved so much that it developed antlers so heavy it couldn't keep its head up. That's probably apocryphal and also not really relevant to the task at hand. Anyway, here's the show. It's Friday, November 22nd, 2024, from Peachfish Productions. It's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. Pam Bondi is in. Trump has a type, and now that type shows itself as his new pick to be Attorney General. Pam Bondi is, like many, a Trump favorite, someone who shows him fealty, hates wokeness, but also looks pretty good on TV. He always says this, is from Central Casting. She is blonde, she's telegenic, and I suspect, Bondi's general, shall we say, mien, her physical features, her visual presentation style, might have played a role in her selection. Now, here's what I mean. Bondi was Florida's attorney general starting in 2011 through all of 2018, 9 days into 2019. She looked then like she does now, but even younger, blonde, pretty, okay. But it was right in the middle of that period when she was the attorney general, when Barack Obama made comments that made the news, that led newscasts, that prompted an apology from the then president. KCRA Sacramento has details.
Thanks, Mark. New tonight, controversial comments by President Obama earlier today at a fundraiser in the peninsula. He said Attorney General Kamala Harris is, quote, by far the best looking attorney general. As an I-Team's Mallory.
Whoa, the best looking? And Pam Bondi's sitting right there in Florida, thousands of miles away. Offended in an entirely different way than the Democrats were or pretended to be at the time. And just as the first Trump administration had a bit of, hey, what did Obama do? Let's do the opposite. Maybe this is what's going on with the Bondi selection. It's not just that she's telegenic. It's that she's a rebuke to something Obama once said. Sure, it's a double bank shot, long game, skip over the Sessions bar and Gates thing. But it could be, in fact, a rebuttal to a Barack Obama statement. Remember when the offensive things a president said were a compliment to an objectively speaking good-looking person? The Today Show reported after those controversial comments, after his remark that California's Kamala Harris was the, quote, best-looking attorney general in the country, sparked controversy. President Obama apologized for what some deemed to be a sexist comment, but others argued was a dumb but harmless compliment. I don't know, perhaps there's even a group out there who thought it wasn't even that dumb, just true and human, after all. But my favorite time capsule of the period was not KCRA Sacramento. It was from the CBS Morning Crew. And at the time, the crew was 2/3 Nora O'Donnell, 1/3 Gail King. Let's listen to them covering it.
While he praised California's Attorney General Kamala Harris, the president called her, quote, by far the best looking attorney general in the country. There was a lot of backlash online, social media, Twitter. Mm-hmm. I think we all know sometimes you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
No, you can't.
Things just come out of your mouth sometimes.
Even when you hit the rewind.
And even after he said how great she was and how smart she was, I mean, come on.
Yeah, he was trying to compliment her, yeah. But it maybe was not the right thing to say. Yeah.
So that male voice there, leading the crew in a bit of tut-tutting over the sexism of Barack Obama, was Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose. Sometimes you say something wrong about Kamala Harris, right, Nora? And the toothpaste and the tube and the rewind and the tape and the chuckling and the cliches. It is so interesting to observe the nonsense of yesteryear and hold it up against the perfectly valid, clear-eyed enforcement of the codes and mores of today. On the show today, it's an Antoine Tig. I am consistently critical, but am I critically consistent? But first, let me tell you about our YouTube page. We got one. Some of these videos and spiels I've been saying, you can look at me while saying it. Good stuff, right? It's at youtube.com/@PescaGist. No one has ever followed a YouTube address in that manner through the voice to the page, but you know, click on it and you'll be a better person and you'll get the sense of me talking into a camera and just speaking into your ears doesn't do it for you. Me looking you in the eye, but then also looking down, but then looking you in the eye. That's what you're looking for in a podcast, is it not? That's what the algorithm says. But first, Dan Diamond is the Washington Post national reporter investigating health, politics, and policy. Yesterday, we talked about Jay Bhattacharya, Trump's possible pick to run the NIH. Today, we're going to pick up where we left off, pivot to a couple more nominees with questionable credentials to run major government health agencies. I'm being nice when I say questionable. Non-existent. We speak of Mehmet Oz and RFK Jr. Grab a glass of fluoridated tap water and non-pasteurized milk because Dan Diamond is bellying up to the bar up next. Dan Diamond is a reporter for the Washington Post. He investigates health politics and policies, and that's why yesterday he talked, I think quite insightfully, about Jay Bhattacharya, who could be tapped to run the NIH. Well, two gentlemen who definitely have been tapped to run important health agencies are Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Dr. Mehmet Oz. And I talked to Dan Diamond about each of them and their agencies. Let's move on to two of the other really intriguing personalities, but I want to also talk about how important their roles are. Let's start with Mehmet Oz. How much good damage change can one do, anyone do, from the position of heading Medicare, Medicaid services?
Well, it depends on your perspective of whether it's good or damage, but this is one of the most important federal agencies in the country. I may be biased because I'm a health reporter, but it's the agency that oversees healthcare for most Americans. Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, these are huge programs with over 150 million Americans getting covered that way. Could a new Trump-appointed director of that agency make changes that make it harder for some people to get health care? Sure. We saw that in the first Trump administration, where there was an effort to include work requirements on Medicaid programs. Medicaid is the safety net program for low-income Americans. Republicans have long said that if you're getting this health coverage, you should also, if you're an able-bodied adult, prove that you have a job or you're trying to get a job. Republicans want to bring that requirement back. It may not happen. It was controversial last time, but that's one idea on the table. Dr. Oz has also talked about the value of a Medicare spinoff called Medicare Advantage. This is Medicare that's run by private health insurers. It has some benefits. There are more services that might be covered under Medicare Advantage, but it also costs more for the federal government. And I've talked to a lot of Medicare Advantage patients who say that United Healthcare and these other private insurers that run their coverage turn them down when they're trying to get procedures done. So more Americans shifting over to that could be a big problem. I think also, Mike, and maybe this is implicit in your question, these big federal agencies are usually best run by people who have lots of administrative experience. Think about former governors or university presidents, or maybe both, like in the case of Tommy Thompson, a former Republican official. Dr. Oz, as far as I can tell, doesn't have that expertise. I mean, he ran a production company, I guess, and ran a TV show, which helped to endear him to Donald Trump. But if you're running the bureaucracy of CMS, you could get into a lot of trouble just being overwhelmed by it. So even if he has big aims and objectives, he could be eaten alive by the government around him.
But the current conservative versus liberal or Republican versus Democrat cleavage on the issue, and who knows what'll happen in the future. But right now, it's more conservative and Republican to try to endorse and get more people to be enrolled in Medicare Advantage. And by the way, more people are enrolled in Medicare Advantage than just Medicare, whereas Democrats or more liberal-leaning people will be opposed to Medicare Advantage. And Oz, when he was running, endorsed Medicare Advantage. Just assess that. If more funding or more emphasis gets more people enrolled in Medicare Advantage, who wins and who loses, and what are the costs and what are the benefits?
I think private industry wins because this is quite lucrative for the private insurers running Medicare. I think patients could lose because Medicare Advantage has increasingly been found to require these pre-authorizations for procedures. And again, patients have said that's been a major surprise. They've signed up for these Medicare Advantage plans and found a lot more red tape than they were expecting.
Yeah. Is, without any sort of reform of the system or moving more people to Medicare Advantage, is the system sustainable in terms of funding?
The death of Medicare has been largely overstated. Yes, Medicare and the federal government's health spending just goes up and up and up over time. But this is something that every time we run into the possibility of Medicare running out of the funds set aside, Congress moves and sets more money aside. Do we need to rein in the spending on healthcare in America? Is it a big problem for the federal budget and for all of us taxpayers as a result? Absolutely. I'm not sure that Medicare Advantage has proved that it is a solution, especially given that it has eaten more cost compared to traditional Medicare.
Talk to me now about HHS. When there is a pandemic, it's a vital agency. When there's not, I would guess that 90% of Americans have not thought of, uttered, or would even recognize the name Xavier Becerra.
especially if it's pronounced that way, because it's Javier Becerra, but yes.
Javier Becerra. Okay, there you go. So Javier, yes. So tell me about a non-pandemic, then we'll get to the pandemic, but the non-pandemic good working order of HHS. How much does the head of it have to do with that agency humming along?
Just a funny story about Secretary Becerra, who runs HHS and is, I don't know what, like ninth in line for the presidency or 12th or something as a cabinet secretary. I was following him around for some reporting earlier this year, and I was standing at an airport check-in counter with him in Ohio for 30 minutes, and literally nobody recognizes this guy. And he's overseeing an agency that's, you know, $2 trillion worth of spending and very important, but yes, totally low profile. I also want to challenge your question, though. I think, yeah, HHS high profile during the pandemic, but what it does around the clock is pretty present. If there's a hurricane or natural disaster, HHS is there. They're sending emergency medical teams. It also oversees all these health insurance programs. It approves the medicines and vaccines through its FDA arm. It takes custody of unaccompanied migrant kids at the border, which got a lot of attention these past years, especially when the Trump administration tried to separate migrant kids from their families.
That's the human services part of it.
Exactly, exactly. And Mike, the way I think about it, having covered HHS for a while, it's almost like covering a city because it's just so expansive and touches so many different parts of America. I'm always learning new things that it does. If RFK Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., takes control of HHS, I think he will be surprised, as past HHS officials have been, that while he might have a certain plan or agenda, because it's just such a big agency, there's always going to be some crisis that comes out of nowhere that occupies the secretary's time.
Let's talk about vaccines. Is the FDA under HHS?
It is under HHS. The FDA commissioner reports to the HHS secretary.
So if the head of HHS has radically different ideas about vaccines than everyone who's ever served in that role before, it could have a giant effect on which vaccines get approved or taken off the markets, yes?
Yes and no. If the HHS secretary picks someone to run FDA or is simpatico with the person who's been chosen to run FDA, then yes, the FDA director would have the authority here. But you could see an FDA commissioner who thinks very differently than Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on vaccines and pushes back on him. And the FDA commissioner does have a fair amount of authority to pursue those policies.
And I'm just trying to think practically. You could be running trials. It could be the case that there are these vaccines that show great promise that would help very many people. And if a bureaucrat gets in the way, and I guess you could impose, you know, higher standards, different standards, more testing to or impossible to meet standards, those vaccines could not come to market. But that whoever thwarted that from happening would be going up against some pretty well-funded pharmaceutical companies and sometimes some pretty highly motivated patient groups, right?
Everything I've seen on vaccines is that while there is this rising tide of vaccine skepticism and people refusing to get vaccinated, overwhelmingly Americans in both political parties still believe in the value of childhood vaccines and some other vaccines. So any effort to reverse that, I think, would be politically explosive. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has said that if he gets into the federal government as the Secretary of HHS, he does want to do more research on vaccines. And Mike, we've talked to people about what levers he could pull. There could be this additional data review that slows down the approval of new vaccines. He could put experts on advisory committees who make recommendations about vaccines. These advisory committees' recommendations aren't binding, but if they're stocked with people who are skeptical of vaccines, you could see it just confusing the issue for state health officials, for schools that are trying to decide whether to recommend vaccines or not. If the federal government is suddenly saying, if its advisors are putting out statements that say, don't use these vaccines or use them in a different way than they have been used.
To your knowledge, does most of what HHS does it fall within topics that RFK Jr. has talked about or seems motivated by? Like, we know it does vaccines and he always talks about vaccines, but you talk about the human services part of it. I don't know that he has a large body of thought or work on that. Is it mostly a thing that's actually in RFK Jr.'s wheelhouse?
RFK has said so many things. He's a 70-year-old man that I don't know the full extent. He may have some deep thoughts on black lung disease and coal miners, which is something that HHS works on. But I actually think, Mike, a lot of the things that RFK wants to do have to do with food.
Yeah.
The Food and Drug Administration does have some regulatory oversight, but many of the things that RFK wants to do also relate to the Department of Agriculture, which is a separate agency, separate cabinet level agency. So whether he's able to accomplish some of his goals of changing farming practices in America, that may be beyond what he can do, even if he joins Trump's government.
Yeah, maybe he was appointed to the wrong agency. I don't know. Maybe he won't get confirmed for any agency. And you've done some reporting on that. And what do the senators who are tasked with advising and consenting on this appointment tell you?
My colleague Rachel Rubin and I ran around Capitol Hill this week, and the senators sometimes ran away from us, didn't want to talk about this. Bernie Sanders allegedly is still going to get me a statement. He told me I'd get it yesterday. Still haven't seen it. But I think the Republican senators who are probably going to be the deciders here, most of them are saying they haven't made up their mind. Some of them are saying, well, we have specific questions about Kennedy's past criticism of vaccines. It would be dangerous to have someone who doesn't believe in vaccines in that role. I cornered John Hoeven, this North Dakota senator, yesterday, who has said he's a little concerned about the agriculture proposals from RFK Jr. Even if RFK Jr. can't directly influence some of these at the health department, still could have a role there. So he wants to talk to RFK Jr. about that. But my prediction, Mike, is that lots of these Republicans who say they're open-minded right now are not going to throw as many roadblocks as they might have if there weren't so many other Trump nominees that they're worried about, too.
Wasn't Mitch McConnell's life saved by the polio vaccine?
I was trying to find McConnell this week because exactly that is Mitch McConnell, now that he's no longer leader of the Republicans and as someone who has spoken up for vaccines, would he draw a line on this? It's crossed my mind, and folks have said he's someone to watch, too, but I haven't talked to him directly.
OK, from what you know, I mean, everyone knows the names, and I'll get you out of here in a minute, but everyone knows the names. Some people are excited. Some people are appalled. Some people want to know if the bear was really stored under the bicycle in Central Park. But is there anything that you think me or the public is missing? Some subtlety, some, you know, giant half a trillion dollar tranche that if it all goes wrong could be misspent? What should we keep our eye on?
Well, I think Kennedy's ideas about trying to make Americans healthy are on the right track in many ways. There are people that I talked to. I was just on the phone with the former New York City health commissioner, who is a Democrat, and said that RFK Jr. is like when, you know, the broken clock strikes right twice a day, that on this issue of chronic disease, he is getting at some of the right ideas. The problem is that many of the things he's said about, say, vaccines and some other public health priorities are incorrect or really alarming to public health.
Yeah, I just to opine, I interviewed Tim Ryan, who's a Ohio politician. He says almost all of the same things that RFK says that people say. I agree with him about obesity and processed foods. But Tim Ryan doesn't have this raft of other ideas and this history. And kind of you don't pay attention to Tim Ryan for doing that. I think there are probably a lot of people in public life who think we eat too much processed food and that obesity is a problem. I don't know that you have to go the route of endorsing the full RFK Jr. to get to a sensible place on those issues.
I stood next to Cory Booker, the New Jersey Democrat, in the Senate yesterday, as he talked for several minutes about all these priorities he has on food and chronic disease. If you took his name off the
transcript... He's a vegan, right?
I think so. Good question. But if you took his name off the transcript, it is very similar to what RFK Jr. would say. There are a lot of things that RFK Jr. kind of says high level on these issues that aren't so dissimilar from Democrats. It's actually interesting how different he is from the Republicans who may vote to confirm him soon. So that is something that's kind of animating our coverage, that RFK, sort of like Nixon to China, maybe not, in fact, certainly not someone that Democrats would want to see in this role, and not someone that Republicans would have wanted to see in this role before he became an ally of Donald Trump. Yeah. But some of the ideas he may be smuggling into the health department could be good things, at least with respect to chronic disease.
One big difference when Nixon went to China, I'm sure he got inoculated beforehand, but we'll do that there. Dan Diamond is national reporter for The Washington Post. He investigates health, politics, and policy. Dan, thank you so much.
Mike, thanks for having me.
And now the spiel, and it is, in fact, an Antwentig, our name for a 3-week period that it's not us, it's just the culture. They've taken the word, very useful word, they've expanded it. So it could be any non-specific period that engenders a look back and a reflection. And so we will correct mistakes, we will answer listener mail, and I hope at the end of this, we will award to a listener the coveted title of Lobstar of the Antwentig. And it's not just a title, it's a physical lobster that we'll mail to you. Get in touch with us, and please put a picture of it on social media. And speaking of social media, I am proud to announce, am I proud? I am compelled to announce, I'm now on Blue Sky. Have you heard of the Blue Sky? It's an angry answer or an exalted answer to the horrible cesspool that was Twitter, or depending if you're on Twitter, it's a ridiculous walled garden where they don't engage in good conversation. Anyway, all social media is, of course, horrible, but they're each horrible in very specific ways. It's very easy to find me on Blue Sky. My handle is Milk Peckis. Oh, my God. You know, you got to watch the typos when you sign up for these things, because they'll be with you forever. At MILKEPESCS. The S being next to the A and the milk being next to the K. So I'm Milk Peckis at Blue Sky. And it is there. By the way, I do this sometimes, and I have an email account that perhaps you've heard of, the very popular email account that's called iCloud, and yet sometimes I will give different websites my email as iFloud. So we don't watch the HBO in my house unless you log in as your iFloud account. Does it drive the CBSO mad? It does. In fact, it does. There on Blue Sky, a very helpful or perhaps critical person named Michael T. Volman started noting which spiels I was doing as of late. And he put them together and he said, 11-8, spiel criticizing Dem/Kamala campaign, trans large portion. 11-11, spiel, make a wish. Mine was for the Dems to have done better. He writes, spiel criticizing Dems, RE trans issues. 11-12, spiel criticizing Republican Kristi Noem. 11-13, spiel criticizing Amy Goodman, a lib progressive. I would call her a lib, but okay. 11-14, spiel criticizing Dems, RE trans issues. I went back and listened. That's actually, there were no trans issues in that. That was just me reading my Democrats are becoming HR. 11-19, spiel criticizing Dems. 11-21, spiel criticizing false equivalency media coverage of RFK. But listen to all this, all these critical spiels. I vow to do more uplifting spiels. I vow to tell you of nothing but progress in my spieling in the future. And if someone should be nominated for, say, a cabinet position who isn't very good or qualified, I will perhaps tell you of someone who could have been worse. And now that Matt Gaetz is out, there are people who could be worse, and it's always Matt Gaetz. We got some corrections, and I have to admit, I was wrong. I was wrong on many occasions. I'm not the best at pronouncing things. Weird job for me to go into, right? But I'll cop to that. I interviewed former Representative Peter Mayer, and I said that correctly the first time, and then I delved into calling him Meyer, Meyer, Meyer. That is so wrong. I was mired in that incorrect pronunciation, and it just appalls me when I do that because it gets in my head, you know, don't say Meyer, don't say Meyer, don't say Meyer. And then what do you say? You say Kamala Harris, or at least Norah O'Donnell did in the beginning of the show. That was from John Brandt. Thanks for pointing that out. Former Peter Mayer constituent John Brandt. Also, speaking of speaking, on the Reddit page, ZDK talked about our funny you should mention interview with Django Gold. And he said, I watched the special after getting through half the interview. Based on his deep baritone, I was a little surprised at Django's nerdy appearance. He killed it, though. Great special. It's true. Django, by coming in with that deep baritone and then looking like he does, he's rickrolling us, isn't he? Now, you wouldn't have been confused by how Django looks if you had just watched the videos. And the videos are available, and we tape them. And sometimes we even have a two-shot. And sometimes you could see my bare leg, because I taped the video in the summer. And you could, do you need me to give the website of the video again? It's youtube.com/MikePescaIFloud. No, it's at PescaGist. But, you know, it's in the show notes. This is why we have the video. So you won't be shocked and rickrolled at our funny you should mention interviews. For instance, Sam J, who was on the show, she's black. You should know that. Informs the interview. Couple more comments that we got, corrections, comments, things that I value. Mike, this is true. Peter Wetzner writes in and says, Caligula's horse wasn't called Incantatus. He was called Incantatus, not Incantatus. Incantatus would mean to sing. And the second comes up from, you know, Speedy Swift to stir up. Sorry about that. I am actually sorry. I hate getting those things wrong. Some things I don't mind, you know. Slip of the tongue type things, like when I say tum instead of tongue. Nick Cart 87 writes, while I have long come to you for your reporting or even-handedness and challenging the status quo, I fear the episode from yesterday where I must part ways with the gist. I do not fault you for your optimism or desire to let data inform your view. I feel you were extremely dismissive of any real threat from Donald Trump and his cult of worshipers. I'm all for balanced, but I feel it's been glossed over and insulted for even having the concern. I wish you and yours the best. I do appreciate years of great reporting, and I understand he wanted less good news and more dire predictions of what would happen during the Trump administration. But guess what? I've been giving you those ever since. Flatus Maximus, gonna guess not his real name, commented on a comment that I made about Indiana University of Pennsylvania, and I think I called it a private school, and he, Flatus Maximus, belched out to me on Twitter, Indiana University of Pennsylvania is a state school, to which I replied, a two-state school, in fact. Now, do I mention this to correct an error, or do I mention this to pat myself on the back for having a good line? Hard to say. Daniel Lerman tells me, and this is another, it's not exactly a pronunciation, but it's using the wrong word in the wrong context, and I do beat myself up for this a little bit. I think I referenced testimony before the Supreme Court. It's oral argument. And then I mentioned the Supreme Court verdict. No, it's a decision. Of course. And you're right. I don't consider this a nitpick. You are correct. But I am going to thank Colin from Michigan for pointing out that one of my complaints about life in general, my third biggest complaint is when you put your number into the phone, sometimes, like when they ask for your phone number, they give you that very convenient to use equivalent of a keypad. Beep, 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 beep. I hope you're not able to retroactively crack the code on the tones I was singing to find out my phone number. I mean, you know, you could get in touch with me at iFloud already, but that would make me very vulnerable to have put out my phone number like that. The reason, he says, that the screen with the numbers doesn't pop up when you put the zip code in is in Canada, zip codes are alphanumeric. So they have to deny the 90% of the North American continent, not including Mexico. They have to deny the 90% of us that inconvenience for the 10% that are Canadian. But at least now I know what the explanation is. And now we give our award, the Lobstar of the Antwentig. This goes to the finest interactor on Blue Sky or Twitter or Reddit or email or to my iFloud account. And this was to the gist at MikePesca.com. Shally Page writes in some really interesting perspectives about the election, Trump's megaphone, Democrats' HR. I'm trying to synthesize the ideas of the electorate in contrast with the populations of Germany or Canada. And then he talks about speech. Trump's megaphone is based on the repetition of outlandish shock jock statements. I like it. That tracks with the American persona of cowboys, individualists, loud, brassy, perhaps ignorant, contrasts with EU efficiency, regulation, environmental concerns. He goes on. But it makes me wonder how Trump hung on to the GOP. Conservatives have strong evangelical roots. True, fiscally responsible, questionable, find anarchy distasteful. They are an orderly folk. Quite a mass. Stroke to hold that coalition together. I also wonder where this childish resistance to rules and policing and diversity leads us. I will be spieling about this in the future. I fear that the id behind it all leads to tragedies of the commons, xenophobia, vast wealth disparities. Maybe that just means I should be in HR. Now that's good, listener. Many themes, didn't just list my spiels and say complainy, complainy, complainy. And in fact, what he did in bringing it back to the HR thing, that is what an excellent rhetorician calls the weave. So Shally Page, shall I compare thee to an autocratic politician? I shall, but I shall also award you the Lobstar of the Antwentig. And that is it for today's show. Corey Wara produces The Gist. Joel Patterson's the senior producer. Collectively, they go by the Quaint Mallards. They're touring the Northeast with their special brand of alt-rock insights and craft beer. Leo Baum's our intern. Michelle Pesk is our CBSO, still scraping herself off the ceiling from the iFloud incident of Aught-23. Oomperoo, Jeeperoo, Dooperoo, and thanks for listening.
Now, have you thought of what animal you'd like to be if you end up alone?
Yes, a lobster.
Why a lobster?
Because lobsters live for over 100 years. Are blue-blooded like aristocrats. And stay fertile all their lives.